The Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy have come to order. Members, thanks for taking the time to come in. Hopefully be done about noonish, roughly, for your planning purposes. In your packet, just want to, there's a copy of the statute, just to remind you what this group can do if it chooses. And we're going to have two meetings today, and then one about the couple days, probably the Monday or Tuesday after the forecast. I think Ways and Means is meeting the Friday after the forecast.
I think, yeah.
So we don't want to get in the way of that. So,
and I think the Senate, we invited the Senate.
Okay. So we'll probably meet that following Monday or Tuesday after this group. You should look at this statute at some point, but one of the key things is this group, this committee, can pretty much do what it wants, except duplicate the work of the finance and tax committees. So I think the way to view that is anything we could do here for a larger bicameral discussion of what we have to work on and long-term thinking, that's what we'd be doing here. We're not trying to do the finance and tax committee's work by any means. But it is the one forum where the key finance, tax, and leadership people are all in the same room. Basically, these are the budgets right here that fundamentally affect our choices. Right, Senator Berglund? She's looking there going, is he talking about me? Do you have your human service person on here?
I haven't met in a while. No.
You might want to think about that at some point.
And then what happens to these other fine people?
Well, I don't know. So anyway, so you might want to look at that statute. And just so you know, I've become convinced over the years, and I'm encouraging the speaker to make more use of this group. And I don't know what the choice will be next year when the House takes over the chairpersonship, but I just think we're going to need all the help we can get this year to get through this. I was here in 81 and 82. I was a legislator. Lynn was here.
Dennis was here.
James, were you? Jim, Mr. President, and Berglund. This is going to be a lot harder than anybody visualizes. This is going to be a bipartisan solution, and it's going to be hard. And you don't have to create politics this year. There'll be plenty of politics. The issue will be, can you do this in a way that avoids politics? So having said that, let's just get a brief update where we are fiscally from our past.
Sure, Mr. Chairman and members, Matt Mossman.
And these handouts, they'll point out, there are handouts for most of this in the packet. So,
Mr. Mossman, Matt Mossman, Senate Fiscal Staff, working from a handout, it just has two tables on the front of it to be probably in the front of your packet. Certainly, the majority of your agenda today is about performance measures, and the idea here is just to start, since the conversation for the legislature is how are those performance measures relate to the budget process, and given where the challenges that everyone's been reading about we're likely to face in the upcoming session, an opportune time to be looking at the budget in relation to performance measures. So this just these two tables here, the top one is fiscal 08-09, and the bottom one, fiscal 10 and 11, reflect what happened, a high-level summary of what happened last legislative session and where we left the budget in the general fund. The top table, we left a general fund balance of $6 million for 08-09 after $315 million in revenue changes, shown in that middle column there, the 2008 legislative change column, and $125 million in net spending reductions for the 08-09 biennium, and a use of $500 million in budget reserve that brought us from a shortfall of $935 within the February forecast to a positive projected balance of $6 million. At the bottom of the table, the bottom table then, that $6 million carries forward. And
so we have a structural deficit before we start.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think you'll actually see on both tables, and a point that it certainly I was going to make here is that if you look at just the total revenues and spending numbers, the $32.8 billion in revenues for 08-09 and the $34.6 billion in spending for 08-09, and then the similar two numbers for 10 and 11, you'll see that in both bienniums we have a structural shortfall. In both bienniums, and that's actually true of the individual fiscal years in those bienniums also, we are spending or projected to spend more than we are bringing in revenues, current revenues in all of those years. The 10-11, where we left things then at the end of last session, we made $143 million in revenue changes and a net of an increase of $3 million in spending, and left a projected balance of $940 million before inflation and just under a $2 billion shortfall, assuming a price inflation estimate using inflation measures in the February forecast.
Mr. Chair, members, Bill Marks, fiscal staff, on two.
Shows the changes that were made in the 2008 session and how they affected fiscal 2010 and 11.
Last session, we concentrated primarily on 2008 and 9, but this
shows the changes by
program area
for 2010 and 11 as a result of the 2008 session changes. And
you can see the areas, decreases in other areas there. And then the chart at the bottom of the page is basically what's happened since the end of session, or
probably more appropriately, what's happened since the February forecast
in terms of revenues only.
This doesn't look at the spending. This is looking at revenues only. And you can
see that there were
substantial amounts, or there were months where revenues were substantially above the forecast. And then you can also see the trend in the last couple of months that
where revenues have dropped below the forecast level. And while it's not shown on the chart here, these, especially in October, we saw all the three major revenues, income tax, sales tax, and corporate taxes were all below forecast levels in October. And the little chart right at the bottom of the page, why were revenue collections above the forecast and why may they be below the forecast in the future, you can see that the gross domestic product, the GDP numbers for the February forecast shown on a quarterly basis, and then for Global Insights November forecast, and you can see the variances there that the economy actually grew significantly more in the first and second quarters of calendar year 2008 than was built into the February forecast. But then if you look at the last two quarters of calendar year 2008, you can see that growth now is projected to be significantly below the level that was in the February forecast.
The last chart then is just, you know, certainly we don't do a forecast, but this chart is something I put together just as a way to maybe think about the one raw ingredient that we know of at this point that the state economists will be using to compute the forecast, and that is real GDP. And what I did here is just think of this maybe as an area graph, if you will. I looked at a situation that you're familiar with in 01 and the 03, the 01 recession and the 03 session shortfalls. So these top two lines in this graph, the top two lines, the one solid one and the dashed one, those lines on this chart are a comparison of the February 02 forecast for real GDP compared to the November 02 forecast for real GDP. So you may recall that during the 2002 session, for fiscal 04-05, we had roughly a $1.5 billion deficit, not including inflation. So during the 2002 session, there was a forecasted shortfall of $1.5 billion for 04-05 after we got done with legislative action in the 2002 session. That would be the top line. That's where the economy was performing on the top line. By November of 02, real GDP was that dashed line that fell below that, and at that point, the forecasted deficit for 2004-05 had moved from $1.5 billion to $4.2 billion. To $4.1 billion.
Someone's phone, or what do we think? Could you turn your cell phones off, please, members?
So, Mr. Chairman and members, it had increased roughly from $1.5 billion to $4.1 billion, which was a $2.6 billion change, if you will, from one forecast to the other for 2004-05. The bottom two lines, then, the solid shaded line that runs through the middle, and then the steep diving dashed line that runs below that, are a comparison of real GDP in this last February 2008 forecast compared to the real GDP numbers that are being now forecast by Global Insights. That'll be the raw material, among many other things, that the state economists will be using in terms of projecting the deficit. And as you can see, it's a significant gap just in the change of real GDP there.
Speaker.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mossman, this is a chart that, after maybe a couple other people just look at it, I'd really like it to be posted. I think it's a frightening chart. And so, just to be clear, and we're not on TV and people will not be able to see this, but the thing that we are concerned about is not necessarily where the lines are on the chart, but it's the space between the lines. And if you, if we could describe it to people, what we're really talking about here is that what you described in 2004-05 was a difference of a gap that is at least three times as large in the projection for right now. Would that be an accurate somewhat? I mean, it's eyeballing it, but it seems to be from looking quickly.
Mr. Chair and Madam Speaker, that is, yes, it's obviously quite a bit larger, two, three times. I think the other thing is, you know, just to reiterate that that's, you know, one raw component, and I don't want to pretend to be an economist. There's obviously Minnesota employment and a whole lot of other things that'll go in, but it's a certainly startling difference in the size of the change in real GDP.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mossman, you're probably doing as well as a lot of economists have done in the last year and a half, so.
Okay, any questions, Senator Bach?
Mr. Chairman, to the Speaker's point, what's really troubling is in the upper two lines in 2003-04, you still have positive GDP growth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a slowing in the growth. What we see right now is we're below the line. I mean, we actually have a shrinking economy, not an economy that is slowing, one that's shrinking, which, so the bottom two lines are much different than the top two lines, because it's not that we've had slowed growth. We actually, our economy actually is going to have less activity in it, below the line, less than last year. Is that, Mr. Mossman, is that accurate, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, yes, and I think, you know, that certainly then if you look at just the two, the economy has the appearance that it's going to be slower to recover this time than it was the last time.
Representative Solberg?
Two things. Also on page two, the negative 31.4, we have to keep in mind $10 million of that is one-time money that came into the state. So, in effect, that would probably be a little bit lower if there was one-time money. So,
which was look, so
the 31.4, the last thing on
October's revenue.
On October. The bottom in October, the 31.4 October.
Oh yes.
I think $10 million of that is, if my understanding, is one-time money that just came in for some properties and that kind of stuff. So. That was income that came in. So, in effect, that could be lower than that without that particular money. But my question is, if I look at this chart and we see that huge difference in the gap, and, Madam Speaker, you're right, Dr. Stenson has taught all of us to figure out the area between the two lines. But Mr. Moss, or does anybody, Mr. Marks, or anybody have any kind of a comparison? Any kind of a comparison of what that kind of lines would look like in the 81-82 sessions when we had, I think it was the last time we had negative growth instead of just a slowing of growth. Would that be any data be available anytime to go back that far?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stolberg, the data is available in terms of comparing, I think, quarterly growth or annually growth. I don't have that in front of me right now. I mean, one could look. I think the other thing, I did look at some of that stuff a couple of weeks ago, and one thing is, I mean, there was more of an iterative process to the information coming out, I think, in 81 and 82, as I recall, too, and that the economy, the forecast kept changing a little bit, and I think it actually might be thought of as a double-dip recession that occurred at that time, too.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Silver, the other thing I guess I just added, Dr. Stinson on this, he'd say their process of forecasting was considered quite different then than it is now. While we could compare GDP, the forecasting issues may be quite a bit different.
Sure.
Okay, let's move on. Second item, a couple handouts, Ms. Jeffries, on tools and principles that apply to budget discussions.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Marcy Jeffries in the Senate Majority Leader's Office staff. In your packets, you'll find a memo from me to Senator Pogamiller dated November 19th. And in this, I'll be brief. I just summarized a couple of recent publications that I thought were relevant to the discussion you're having today. And these are about tools that committees could start using before they get down to working with the numbers that you just heard about. And some of these tools you may already be using, and you might be able to expand your use. And that's going to be the topic of the majority of the discussion today. The first paper is one that the GAO did, and it was oriented towards Congress, but I think it has recommendations that are relevant to state legislatures as well. And one of the key ones is developing indicators that can facilitate discussion about what government's key goals and objectives are. The GAO's report wasn't intended to give Congress some tools to conduct what they thought was a much-needed reexamination of the spending base and what government's doing, and also to communicate better to the public what Congress and government does. The indicators, they thought, would, in addition, sort of help establish goals and objectives, would give sort of a big picture notion of where the country is at and, again, communicate more effectively what Congress and the country is aiming towards. They have several other recommendations in there, including working across jurisdictionally, paying more attention to the long-term implications of things, and then clearly defining strategies and outcomes, and holding public hearings across the country with citizens to hear more about what they think government should do and what government should be paying for. They call this a reexamination agenda, and one of their points they make at the end is that the kind of change they're talking about, this approach to government where we put more emphasis on goals and measurement, will take time, and that policymakers and their staffs should be prepared to start early and often to affect that kind of change. The other paper, the full report, is in your packet, and that was done by Judy Zilio from the National Conference of State Legislatures, and she did it for the IBM Center for Business Government. She's talking specifically about performance measurement. The GAO report is kind of a bigger strategy that includes these objectives and goals, with performance measures being one element of moving towards and measuring progress towards those goals. The paper that Judy writes is mostly about the performance measurement piece. And she notes that this idea has been around for a long time, performance measurement, and it's caught on pretty well in the executive branch and is used as a tool for managers. It's been slower to catch on in the legislature, in legislatures across the country. And one theory is that we're finally catching on that legislators have different needs for information than the executive branch does, and the performance measures have been oriented towards executive branch needs. Legislators, while they're concerned about inputs and efficiencies and costs per units, are also concerned about policy and the outcomes and what these programs are ultimately intended to do, and performance measurements often fall short of giving you that kind of information that you need. She had five recommendations in her report. And she does note there are some states, by the way, that have done a lot more with performance measurements and indicators and strategies as well, and that's one of the things Mr. Armajani is going to talk about. She has five recommendations, and I'll just highlight a couple of them. One of them was saying that, in fact, the performance information that you get should emphasize and provide you more information about the results, the outcomes of the policies that are being delivered by the programs and state agencies. And then her second recommendation was that legislative and executive branch and legislators as well should work together to jointly come up with some performance measures to make sure that they're useful to you in your work. In terms of applying these notions from these two papers to Minnesota, a lot of these elements are already in place, and they could be expanded more and could be utilized early in the session or before a session even begins. One of the things that's already in place partially is a system of indicators. Minnesota established these Minnesota milestones back in 1992. It's 19 goals that the state is people across the state agreed on for things that the state should be oriented, how they wanted the state to look like. The indicators, though, haven't been updated since 2002. In 2008, the legislature passed several provisions intended to kind of reinvigorate and get the indicators updated, and also measures were included in that legislation to try and make the milestones and that the indicators more relevant to your work and figure out how it could help legislators in their work. And part of that legislation in 2008 also formed a subcommittee of this commission, a subcommittee on accountability, which is to look at figuring out ways to work performance measurement into your process and also how to make things like the milestones and other statewide indicators more relevant and useful to you. The other piece that's already in place in Minnesota is the performance.
Members, that subcommittee is in the process of being appointed. Senator Cohen and someone on your side. Not sure, but that group will start gathering, I think.
The other piece, Mr. Chair, that's in place is performance measures, and the fiscal staff are going to talk more about this later. But we have performance measures, state agency performance measures. They've been around for a long time. They're in a variety of places in documents. One of the places that they are in, that there are requirements about, is in the budget book. So in your packet, there is a copy of the budget preparation statute that highlights what the requirements are now for putting performance measurements in the budget document. And that information right now for 10 and 11 is available to you. That's the first step in the budget process when the state agencies do their budget narratives and submit them to the Minnesota Management and Budget Agency. And the narratives are the place where you can find what the agency says their goals and missions are, and you can find what performance measures they're using to track their progress towards that. And these documents are obviously intended for your use. And like I said, that information was posted, I think, in October by the finance agencies. The other thing that for the first time you'll see...
And the fiscal, this is a question, and the fiscal staff in both the House and Senate are looking at those documents now to help the committees? Is that...
Yes.
And I want to tread lightly how I ask this. Do the committees use that information?
Mr. Chair, I think it's fair to say committees use it to varying degrees, and some more than others.
So the final point on
Senator Berglund?
Well, I might just say my experience, at least in the last 6 years, has been that it's a lot easier for agencies to focus on the performance of people they contract with than it is for them to focus on their own performance. So I'll give you an example in my budget area. You know, there was developed a set of performance criteria that nursing homes should be measured against. And the governor insisted that a part of the reimbursement for nursing homes be withheld and be given to them based on their performance against these performance standards. But we have a nursing home that we run ourselves, the Minneapolis Veterans Nursing Home, which hardly meets any of those standards. And so I just want to caution us about how easy it is to measure others and how much harder it is to perform ourselves.
So your encouragement would be is that we focus on those agencies that we directly.
Well, I certainly would think we'd have more control over that, or should have more control over that.
Okay. Ms. Jeffers?
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'll just finish up by pointing to the questions and issues on the last page. I just want to highlight a couple of them. These are things that members may be already thinking about or could think about as you look at the performance information in the budget narratives that will come before you. How well does that information answer the questions you have, and how well does the goals and missions that the agencies have identified match what you think they should be doing, and are the measures going to give you that kind of information you need? And then how much input have you had in choosing the measures that the agencies have used to monitor their progress?
Okay. Well, there's a couple examples later after that the staff will go through after Mr. Armajani speaks. So any questions right now? Thank you. Babak Armajani is a homegrown talent. You may know that he's one of the principals of a group called Public Strategies. He's a former Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, also a deputy in the Department of Agriculture. He's been a faculty member at the University, Indiana University, and Metro State. He's co-authored a few books. And his group normally charges people for what he's just going to say. But he was kind enough to say, you know what, we're Minnesota people. I'd be glad to come over and chat with you a little bit fee at this point, so. And I don't think he's looking for a fee, so this is not a setup for future contracts. I think they've had some experience in other states that might help us think about how we could improve what we're doing here. Welcome, Mr. Armajani.
Chair, Madam Speaker, glad to be here. I'd have the opportunity to share with you a little bit about what we're seeing going on around the country. Support you in your efforts to grapple with this most fiscal problem that appears that it's going to get even worse than what it is. I'm a student of accountability and government, and because I believe that when you have the right kind of accountability and the right kind of tools for accountability, you get better performance. Shrinking resources, we need better performance, better results from the money that we're getting. So
I wonder, that may be the mic that's the problem. Why don't you pick one of those other ones? We've determined that there's a loose wire somewhere, but without going under the table and looking.
They're just testing it. It's okay.
Well, that's not what I was just told. But
really?
Well, no, they know there's a bad one, but they don't know which one it is.
And they can't get under the table to find it. Is what I was
okay. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to put in my comments in the context of accountability, because I think that's obviously the locus of this committee, and that's where you have powerful leverage. I hope to stimulate you about what's possible from looking at examples from what people in other states are doing, and I hope to make you uncomfortable about the way we do things today in Minnesota, because I believe they have to change substantially for us to grapple effectively with this crisis. And I believe we have always been a place of innovation. I believe we can continue to be. And I hope to inspire you to act. In particular, just thinking about this session, there are things you can do not only in the big picture to grapple with the fiscal challenges, but also in your the budget process and in your oversight of where the spending goes, that you can do immediately, that I think will start to move Minnesota towards a more of a 21st century approach to accountability. This goes in, you hear various terms, but it goes under commonly you hear people talk about results-based government, and a lot of the literature, that's the terminology I'm going to use. Nobody knows exactly what it means, but it's a different paradigm. It's a different system of governance than what we use, and one that I believe people are flocking to very rapidly because it's better suited to meet the challenges of today. that our old systems were designed for the last century and don't work as well for us today as they did even 20 years ago when I was serving in Minnesota state government. Think of it like a comparing a steam engine to a solar power. And what we have in Minnesota is a very, very well-run, well-managed steam engine. And I know this because I work in many states. I work for many governors, legislatures, also in cities and counties around the country. And I see how well we compare with others around the country. But what's happening that's inspiring in other places that we would do well to emulate and be stimulated by is they're moving from steam power to solar power, just to use that metaphor. And they're changing in basic ways the way government works, and it all hangs around performance management systems, defining the outcomes that you, as our representatives, know Minnesotans want, figuring out how to measure them, and then driving everything, not just budgeting, but our personnel systems, the legislative process, our management systems in the executive branch, how you talk with citizens when you're door knocking, driving everything through the lens of what kind of results are we getting, and having the data there so that you can dialogue with citizens about the results you're getting and about, for example, different ways to spend our precious dollars that would produce better outcomes, that would have more leverage. All of this starts with a new bottom line. So we used to think about the bottom line when we talk about budgeting in terms of cost. We want to keep costs down. And what states like Iowa, Washington, South Carolina, Michigan, and others that are Virginia, that are pioneering in this area are doing is they're defining the bottom line as results per dollar. So it's a ratio. And it has some sort of result. Maybe it's reducing teen pregnancy or reducing commute times in the metro area or creating new well-paying jobs, whatever it might be. And then the denominator is how much it costs to do that. And so at the statewide level, we look at results per dollar, and in these states that are using these radically different budgeting systems now, they're also each budget request is cast in terms of what specific results will we get for how much money, so that you, in making your budget decisions, can determine the best combination of things to fund, of results to fund, that will move the dials on the high level outcomes that we're pursuing. Whether you use Minnesota Milestones, or now we have the Compass Project that Wilder's doing, that provides you already with a context for that. I want to just quickly suggest some specific things you can do, but I also want to kind of warn you about three myths that I see around the country in terms of what people are doing. The first is a liberal myth, and the liberal myth is the belief that if we spend more money on something, we'll get better outcomes, or if we spend less money on something, we'll get worse outcomes. And you know, I suppose at some level that is true, but it's we can look, for example, at our K-12 spending over the last 20 years, and where we've been really good in Minnesota about funding K-12 relative to other states, but we're not experiencing outcomes improving with that additional funding. And so it raises questions about whether there's a better way to do K-12 or healthcare or transportation or economic development. And when these questions are raised and when legislators and governors hold government accountable for these questions, we're seeing tremendous innovation and better ways to do things. And I think that potential's there. Then there's the conservative myth, and the conservative myth is that this is all about reducing the number of bodies or reducing the number of inputs in the government process that we think represent unnecessary cost. And sometimes that's a good thing, but sometimes all it does is shrink operations, not make them better. And there we're going to have to find ways to both shrink and improve. And that's why I talk about this bottom line of results for dollar. You got to do both things. And the conservative myth just focuses on the denominator and not on the numerator. And the final myth is the measurement myth. And that is, and you see that reflected, it is going back many, many years in the budget narratives that the executive branch sends to you. They paste in performance measures. And it's like, it's a good thing to have performance measures, but it isn't affecting behavior. It's not driving what's going on. It's just something pasted in there. It's like going back to the solar power steam engine example. It's like taking a solar panel that's equivalent to a performance measure and handing it to a state agency and saying, here, you use this, and they say, fine, we'll paste it in our budget narrative, and then we can keep on doing steam power, which is what we know how to do, and so we have this solar panel that's sitting there that's not really doing anything. It's not even hooked up because we're still doing steam power. That's kind of what I see going on here and in many other places, but that's beginning to change in other states that are making some more dramatic changes. Well, I want to just stop at this point and use the remainder of the time to respond to any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Armajani, for joining us. I'm very curious about these states that have probably taken something like ours. I suspect other states had this sort of system of putting in performance measures that maybe were less effective or not effective at all. And how do we begin to pivot from, I think Senator Berglund made a very good observation. We might be better doing a better job looking at those who we contract with than looking at ourselves. How do we take what is an existing system, because I think we're going to look at a couple of them next in examples, and actually are they useful the way they are, or should we start over? And do we need to change something more fundamental? Is anything salvageable in our current performance measure system?
Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, absolutely. There's a lot of good things there. And I think going back to Minnesota Milestones and the Carlson administration and the Big Plan, is that what it was called, in the Ventura administration, there's some infrastructure there that's valuable and useful and upon which we can build. But the critical thing is that from the agency's perspective, and not just state agencies, but K-12 system, local governments, or whatever, they come to you in their budget narratives and in the performance measures that are in there, and they measure what they're doing, and they give you measures of what they're doing. And as the NCSL report that Marcy highlighted for you says, what you want is for them to do what you measure.
Could you please say that again just because of them?
Rather than have people measure what they do, you want them to do what you measure. So what you measure as representatives of the state, of the outcomes, you talked earlier about the policy outcomes that we want. So you want everybody that gets a nickel of state money to be doing something to move the dials on our high-level performance agenda to improve our economy measurably, to improve student achievement measurably, to improve the condition of people that need support measurably, to improve our environment measurably, et cetera, in each area. So you want to use performance systems not to say to the MnDOT, how many vehicles do you have, or not to say to Human Services, how many cases did you handle, but to say, Our goods and people moving across our roads, our disabled people moving towards independence, et cetera. We want to measure outcomes, and we want the agencies to do things to change what they're doing to produce those outcomes, rather than just to measure what they're doing. The hypothesis that underlies that is that If we focused our attention on the outcomes, we could find better ways to use the precious money that's available to get them. I'll give you one example from Iowa, which has been a real pioneer in this whole area, both on the budgeting side and on the performance management side. The legislature and the governor of opposite parties, who had quite acrimonious relationship back in 2004, got together around a series of initiatives to get better results for the money because they were in serious budget problems. And one of those initiatives was to reform the child protection system. Child protection has six specific measures that the feds under Title IV-E specify for children that measure whether children are safe and whether they're progressing educationally, et cetera. And they wanted to improve those numbers. And they actually reduced by 10% the child protection budget, the state child protection budget, but they completely rethought how they were using the money they had, and in particular, going to Senator Berglund's point earlier, in Iowa's case, most of this money was used to purchase services from nonprofit organizations that provide child protection services, Catholic Charities and Lutheran Social Services and so forth, that provide various child protection services. And all of those services were being purchased like bed space or hours of therapy instead of outcomes. And so what Iowa did, and Illinois had done something similar to this a few years before, was say to all these agencies, we want to continue to buy these services from you, but we want to do so based on performance. And we want to pay you when a child, for example, progresses from an institution under the state's care back into their home where it's safe, or into a permanent adoption in a good family or whatever, and so they're really using the money to buy outcomes instead of to fund nights in an institution. And in the case in Illinois' case, what they found was, and this was not a slam on all of the social service agencies, but they had an incentive to keep the children in the institutions. And they'd counter on it for their revenues, rather than to move the children through to a non-institutional setting, and so they were just more than happy to participate in changing the way they got funded. Now, that's an example. And in Iowa, they spent less money, and they're getting about 10% less money, and they've been consistently since 2005 been getting better results on the six federal 4E measures. That'd be an example.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you think we need to bring back something like Minnesota Planning? And if not, where do you think we ought to come up with these performance measures or preferred outcomes?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you trying to get me run out of the state here? I think that we need to invest in change. If we look at it like, and I'll get to planning in a second here, but if we look at it like the auto industry, we're going to end up like Detroit is right now unless we invest in change. And, you know, for them, it would be retooling their factories to produce smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. For us, it would be retooling state government to produce better results with less money that we've got. And in order to do that, one of the investments we need to make is that you need, as a legislature and the governor needs, an honest broker, a source of information about performance that for every single nickel, for every budget request, that you can say, are we getting the results that we asked for or not? And you can't rely on the state agencies alone to tell you that, because they have a vested interest. You need an honest broker of some sort. I think that state planning could have played that role. But I think, and you could bring back state planning, but there are alternatives. You could fund the legislative auditor to do what's called performance auditing. Washington is doing that. Florida does it. Texas does it. That's another alternative. Or you could contract with the Wilder Foundation, which is already doing this Compass program, to provide you with, to be your honest broker, and to provide you with third-party information. Or you could create a state agency to do it. And I don't have a strong opinion about what the best way to be. I think I would avoid creating a state agency to do it, but Virginia has the Virginia Commission's Futures Commission, which got a small staff. There's about 10 or 12 people, and it has a board made up of legislative leaders, gubernatorial appointments, some business people. So it's not in the executive branch. I don't know how you'd describe it, but it's an independent government agency, and its job is just to collect performance information and publish it.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, actually that last question get close to what I was thinking in terms of how you set those standards. And I remember a number of years ago when Steve Kelly was in the House, we went down this road with the University of Minnesota, and we had a pretty good discussion about who should set the standards. Was that going to be the legislature, or was that going to be the Board of Regents? In the end, the way we did it was we had the Board of Regents set the standards or goals, and then we were to hold them accountable for what they told us they were going to do. And so I was interested in maybe a little more detail about how those standards would be set when you were going down the road of, you know, a contract state agency. But if you could maybe comment on whatever that process is, how you engage the legislature then. Because that was a big part of our discussion. At what point does the legislature get engaged, and just how do you do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I'll tell you a little bit about what the state of Washington is doing, which I think addresses directly your question. And I'll circulate these. Can you? Thanks. That describe a little bit about the dramatically different budget process that Washington uses, coupled with something called GMAP, which is the Washington's outcome architecture. It's their set of performance measures for the state. And it's survived a couple of different administrations. It's something that Governor Gregoire takes very seriously, meets regularly with her department heads on, and it's also something that the legislature, which I don't know what happened in the last election, but was controlled by the other party, also takes seriously. And they're all working off the same system. They have disagreements, of course, about priorities and things, but they're using the same system. And so it works like this. When you ask for money in the state of Washington, with that request, you're saying, I'm going to move this dial on GMAP, I'm going to improve, this is going to improve economic development, or this is going to reduce crime. You say which dial you're going to move, and you present evidence about why what you're going to do, one would believe, would move that dial, and you say by how much you're going to move that dial, and how much money you want to do it. The legislature and the governor spend, I won't say no time in the budget office, but they spend a lot less time examining the price that you're going to charge than they do choosing among alternative things to find the best deal. And so the when you talk about the standard, you know, what's the standard to which you might hold people, if you're an offeror in the budget process in the state of Washington, and if you pad your budget like all good public managers do in a normal budget game on that card that I'm talking about, if you're in the executive branch, you request money, you pad your budget because you know that the governor's going to cut it and the budget office is going to cut it and the legislature's going to cut it, and you want to end up with kind of about the right amount of money. And then you, on the other hand, you know that the executive branch are padding their budget request, but you're not sure exactly how or where, and you got a few fiscal analysts, but you don't have near the staff power that the executive branch does. So you take wild swings every once in a while to find out who yells and in order to reach a good budget solution. In Washington, if you do that, you lose in the budget game. That's a losing strategy. In Washington, they're buying the things that give the best results for the dollar. And so if you're in the K-12 system or local government or a state agency in Washington and you want to win some dollars in the budget game, you put the best offer possible in terms of results for the dollar on the table, because those are the things that get funded. And there's an accountability system to back it up, which is this GMAP system, which every month generates data and tells both the legislature and the governor how they're doing on delivering the specific measurable outcome that they said they were going to deliver. And people who don't, I don't know, well, actually, Governor Gregoire reviews these things quarterly with departments, and it's a public meeting. It's on cable, and sometimes it's very embarrassing politically when things aren't going well. But having it on TV makes it really makes people really accountable, because nobody wants to embarrass the governor by not performing. And I think the legislature has not funded things because promises made in earlier budget cycles were not delivered on. So the answer to your question is, if you use that kind of a system, which I would describe as kind of a marketplace for ideas, using our $35 billion to get the best outcomes for Minnesotans, you give people a lot of freedom in pricing their offers to you, but you only buy the offers that give you the best prospects of results for the money, and that's a very different budget game than what we play today.
Thank you.
Representative Solberg.
Chair, Mr. Amirjani, there seems to be a disconnect between, and I think Representative Carlson was trying to ask a similar question, what I have, a disconnect between who establishes the performance measurement and evaluates them. Right now, it seems to me the executive board executive branch of government is establishing the performance measures. And I think earlier you said there should be performance based on the policies that we want as opposed to what the executive branch wants. And right now I think our performance measures are developed by the executive branch and they come in and tell us how good they're doing or not doing. And we are supposed to hold them accountable to that. Both Representative Simons and Representative Carlson, I think, we're trying to get at how do you connect the policies that we want with the performance that the executive branch brings before us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, thanks for clarifying because I don't think I got at that question. We've worked with both legislatures and governors on implementing systems like this, and who don't agree or who are from opposite parties, who conflict over policies. In most cases, they can agree on the outcomes, not necessarily in the policies to get those outcomes. So people can say, yeah, we want student achievement. We want kids to learn at least a year's worth of learning in a year's worth of time in school, or we want more and better jobs, or we want personal income to rise. It's not so difficult across partisan lines or between branches of government to agree on those broad outcomes. The policies or the strategies to get there are where the debates are, and the good news is that when you have a way of measuring the outcomes you're getting, you have a laboratory in which you can see which policies and strategies and where you can argue are working and which are not. I think the best example of that would be Michigan in 2005, where Governor Granholm decided to use a process like the one described on the card, and so did the legislature, which was controlled by both houses were controlled by Republicans, and so they both decided to use this new and different process, but they weren't talking to each other. There was a lot of acrimony between them and between the House and the Senate. And they came up with remarkably similar and compatible sets of, you know, the 10 big goals of state government and how to measure them. And there were some small differences, but they were easily resolved. Now, they had huge debates about how to spend the money and how to move the dials and differences, but there were very little. And the House in Michigan, by the way, and this is something you might consider, organized themselves around results. There were committees. So if you think about our committees, could you, without changing the committee structure, which I know would be a huge can of worms, but could you in this session for each committee say this committee is working on a critical goal, whether it's economic development or regulation or education or whatever it might be, and what are the indicators for that committee, and could you say in this session we want to start the budget process by asking the executive branch to tell us these are our three indicators of this committee for whether we're reaching our goal, the three measures that we have, and we want every executive branch that wants money from us to tell us specifically what they're going to do to move one or more of those dials. And I don't know this for a fact, but I believe that this legislature and this governor wouldn't have a huge amount of trouble getting together around what the measures ought to be. I know that there would be huge differences on how to get there, you know, because of political philosophy and so forth. So I hope that answers your question, Representative Silbert.
Well, most of the time, Mr. Chair, the performance measures have been adopted by the executive branch and presented to us, and I look at one that's before us and how they measure it and so forth, which is fine. But that may not be what the policy of the legislature is. And I don't know how we I think you started to give us some ideas on how the legislature gets into the performance of what are the policies we want for you to be able to develop your performance measures around.
Mr. Chair, Representative Silbert, for example, in Michigan, the legislature said, we in healthcare, they said, we want to fund prevention. All our money is going into remediation of disease and into healthcare. We want to fund wellness, at least some. And we set aside a pot of money here just to fund wellness. And so, if you have a wellness offer, bring it to us. And because we're going to spend part of our money on people not getting sick, because it's a lot cheaper to spend it on wellness. That didn't come from the executive branch, but people in the executive branch are smart, and they want the money, and they'll do anything to get the money. So they just quickly retooled their offers, you know, to say, well, this is going to produce wellness. And so you got to have the accountability systems in place to see if that's true. But you could do that.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Armajani, can you talk briefly about what other states have done as they've moved in this direction? You've identified a couple that have, but you know, are they going all in? Are they testing the waters to see what works? And I guess what I'm thinking of to try to provide an example, and I just pick the Department of Corrections. I could do this with any state agency, but if the legislature said these are the 10 outcomes that we want to see, what is the department to do, or what is the legislature to do about the other 842 different things that we've told them they have to be doing over the last 50 years that we haven't addressed here? So can you address that a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
It's 800's a little low, probably. Isn't it?
Yeah. Two things about that. One thing is, if you move towards a budgeting system like the one described on the card, you don't start with the base, with last year's base. You start with zero. And so you say...
Mr. Chair, I think I just saw several state agency representatives have an absolute heart attack. With the defibrillator in the room, we may need it. Sorry for interrupting.
And so you start and you say, we got this much money. What are the ways we could spend it to produce the best outcomes? And rather than saying, well, we've got the base, and now, Dr. Stinson's telling us we're going to have a lot less money, and so we're going to have to cut a billion or two, and where do we cut? You say, well, it looks like we're going to have, you know, $34 billion. Where do we spend it? And in so doing, you end up not funding some things, maybe even sacred cow things, and the great thing about this kind of a budget process is people seem to be getting away with it politically. I'll give you an example from Washington, from Governor Locke's administration in Washington. The people of Washington passed a class size referendum. I can't remember, it was 20, you know, it was graded down like we have. And it was a referendum that said that there will be small class sizes. Problem was, it wasn't funded. Washington was in big fiscal problems, didn't have the money. When they went through this budget process, people said, well, first thing we got to do is fund the referendum. And the governor said, No, we don't. We're going to start, we'd look at the evidence, and we're going to fund the things that we think will move student achievement best. What's the evidence about class size? Well, everybody said, you know, parents, you know, every politician knows that parents want small classes. I mean, we all want small classes for our kids. But if you look at the evidence, there's very little evidence that shows the student achievement is correlated with class size. There's just not empirical evidence of that. So in the end, when they brought, and this was just inside the executive branch, but you can imagine this kind of dialogue going on in the legislature as well. When they brought forward the budget to the governor, they didn't fund the referendum that had just been passed by the people of a Democratic governor who had the strong support of the teachers union. They didn't fund it, and because the evidence didn't warrant it, and he got away with it. They didn't fund in Washington incarceration of nonviolent offenders over the age of 50, I think it was. And so nobody came in with an offer to incarcerate these people, and because it didn't make any sense. And so, and you can imagine the politics of that, letting, you know, criminals out loose out on the street. They did. And they got away with it. And I think part of the reason they got away with it, they had tremendous editorial support from the newspapers and good government groups and that sort of thing. But part of the reason they got away with it is it made sense to people. It wouldn't make sense if you said, we're going to turn these criminals loose. If you said, we've only got so much money in our correction system, and we want to spend it in the places that where it's most important. In that context, it made sense to citizens. So those are a couple of examples, and I'm sure you can think of many others.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Armajani, are there any states that hold a part of the management pay increases to performance-based outcomes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, yes. I am not thinking of anywhere that's a deal between the legislative branch and the executive branch, but in there certainly are several states where managerial bonuses or pay increases are performance based. Florida,
we do have.
Texas. That would be a good thing to do. Easy thing to do.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm kind of interested in what, if you could describe the second step, going back to the questions that we're asking. You use wellness as an example where the legislature might put out initiative there and ask the agencies to respond in terms of how they would meet that and then fund it. But what would be the next step? Now, when I referenced earlier what we did with the university, we had five or six goals that the regents had adopted. One of them, if I recall, was to improve graduation rates. That was a little easier to measure, you know, where they had been and where they had finally ended up. But what would be the second step then once you've put that, I'll call it an RFP or goal out there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the second step after you've decided to fund it or just after you put the goal out there?
Well, walk me through the after you decided to fund it and then what you would do, let's say, the following year or biennium. The other example I was trying of asking about would be, for example, research. We're always told that if we're investing in research and we put a fair amount of money there, that that's not something that's going to be immediately measurable, but that you have to look at things long term. Well, wellness, I think, would be like that. You'd have to look at things long term. So what is the second step, and how long would you, well, let me just ask you to respond to the second step.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the next step then would be after you fund somebody to produce a measurable outcome, you hold them accountable for delivering on their promise. And you do that, and the NCSL report that Marcy sent out is excellent suggestions, specific suggestions, by getting regular reports on a monthly basis. If I were you, I would want them on a monthly basis about how we're progressing towards delivering on the promise of the result for the money. That's if you think of it like a contract that you made with the state agency or with the K-12 system or somebody, and you see whether you're getting, and if you're not getting results for the money, you know, you call them in and you ask them to explain to you what's going on, and I don't think you have to get punitive in order to have accountability, but they need to know that you're going to be following on whether they deliver on their promise for the money. Right now, when you fund state agencies, you know, what you're doing is you're actually funding a bunch of costs, like a number of employees and their travel budget and their computers and stuff like that. And so that's what you get, is you get a bunch of employees and the travel costs and their computer budget. And thank God we got great people in Minnesota, and so they go out and do great things. But wouldn't it be better if you funded outcomes? And that's how they got the money? And not because they had an FTE slot, but because they said we're going to reduce teen pregnancy or whatever, you know, whatever the promise was. And our so early experience with this is that people are getting good results. To an earlier question, there are very few states that are going, quote, whole hog into an approach like this. And most of them that are going incrementally are regretting it. Because this is like spending money on a solar panel because you want to move to solar power, but you still have the steam engine. And if you only go part way, you're still producing steam power instead of solar power. And you if you want to buy the solar panel, you got to hook it up and capture the sun and get the batteries and capture the energy that way. And you have to invest to do that. And the number one thing that we see that people doing that leaves them short is not investing in change. And so even in a time where we have a huge fiscal crisis, if you're serious about producing better results for Minnesotans, you need to think about ways to invest one-time money in this fiscal year with all of these fiscal challenges. That's an investment in the future. And investments like making sure that the legislative auditor or state planning agency or Minnesota Compass or somebody is funded to give you that reliable performance data. And, you know, that's a hard investment to do in the middle of a fiscal crisis. But and changing the culture from we're here to do our jobs to we're here to produce better outcomes.
Okay, before we move on, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I think what I heard was when I asked about the second step, then it's greater oversight. Requesting more frequent reports and feedback once you have the initiative out there is what I think I heard.
Monthly. Absolutely.
Mr. Armajani, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. I'm guessing that you'll probably get a phone call or two here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker. It was a pleasure.
Do you have any other things like this that are easy to motivate people with?
Why is it full of them?
Staff, you're going to come up and talk about some specific. And while you're doing that, I'm going to pass out hopefully a motivator on why we should think about zero-based budgeting the way Mr. Armajani just mentioned. Staff just did a rough cut that if you had to cut $2 billion and you just did it proportionally, what would that look like? And then they did a cut. If we had to cut $5 billion and did it proportionally, what would that look like? Now, obviously, we're not going to just make proportional cuts around here because that's not setting priorities. But it does give you a feel for the scope of this. Mr. Mossman, do you just want to go through the columns real quick so people know what? I think what you want to do is look. Which column do they want to look at?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a copy.
And again, this is just illustrative of why, in the situation we're coming upon here, you really have to look at the base. You just have to.
Thanks.
And I look at the $2 billion one. The $5 billion one seems kind of scary.
So
just
so look at the $2 billion.
Mr. Chair, and members, it just, yeah, as you stated, it's across the board. So if you look at the $2 billion reduction column, obviously at that level, which is in all likelihood, as you indicate, below the situation we're dealing with or going to be facing, the reductions would be sizable across the budget areas, $605 million for Health and Human Services, $105 million for Public Safety and Judiciary combined.
The Public Safety Judiciary one, I think, is the quickest one, the easiest one to look at. We put in 8.5 last year. We apparently gave them 8.5 million more over their base. Under a $2 billion reduction, just their proportional share, Mr. Chief Justice, is $104 million. You know, but maybe we don't want to touch the judiciary and the judges. Maybe we could cut higher ed, $175 million. Minsky, I heard yesterday, cut theirs in half. They're now at just $100 million or so they're asking for new money. But they cut it in half. So, again, I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just the scope of this. And we haven't even mentioned human services. And, I'm, you know, we're going to hear from Senator Burgle and others about that. And K-12, anybody ready to cut K-12, $700 million?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I don't at all think you're being facetious. There's a lot of people that aren't in this room today that really need to be here, and I wish this was being taped. We cannot tax our way out of this problem. I mean, I have had our staff look at what some of the potential revenue options might be. We can't get out of this with new revenue. And, you know, I've been thinking about this for a while because for a long, long time, I've been a business manager of a labor union. And I felt for some time in that environment that I kind of look at what's happening around the country to labor unions that I just feel like I've kind of been participating in the management of the decline of labor unions in this country. Now, Minnesota's probably doing better than other places, but it's pretty hard to argue that labor unions in this country are growing. And I've been one of those labor leaders and oftentimes feel like we're just kind of floating along, managing things that come our way, and every year we have less people represented. And I started to think of that in terms of my work here in the last couple of years, and I started to think I got a foot in this world in the labor movement where I'm managing the decline. And in my other occupation as a state lawmaker, am I doing the same thing? Is that what my life is about? It's just managing the status quo? Is that all the better I can do? And I started to think, you know what? Someday when I'm laying in a nursing home bed, that doesn't seem good enough. And, you know, I really, really appreciate Mr. Armajani's comments. You know, it's human nature for individuals or committees or agencies or management systems or programs or go down the list to perform at the level they're expected to. And that's just an element of human nature. And it just kind of seems like that's where we are. And somebody or some group of people have to stand up and challenge the status quo, because the status quo is decline. And if we stay on this path, that's what we're going to all be remembered for. It won't be the Minnesota that we grew up in. And I think Mr. Armajani is right. I think we got to have a serious discussion about where we start from this session. I mean, do we really start from where last year's, this current biennium's budget was, or do we just kind of start all over and take a look at everything we've been doing? And I told NPR yesterday, some people aren't going to probably like hearing it when they hear it, but I do think everything is should be on the table. Everything. We ought to, every budget committee ought to examine everything we're doing, and it's likely we're not getting very good outcomes for some of the things we're doing, or maybe some of the things we're doing don't make any sense anymore. But they're not little pieces. You know, and we're going to find out December 4th how bad it really is, but I mean, I'm just telling you, Representative Mucheski's not here to speak for the House Tax Committee, but her and I are going to spend some time together next week. We can't get you out of this problem. I just want everybody to understand that. And that means the finance committees are going to have some really, really heavy lifting to do. And you're going to have to think about this budget different than we've thought about them in the past. And, Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you for bringing Mr. Armajani in to, so that maybe we start to think about things differently. Because I would argue we've been distracted in just managing what our predecessors have done before us and kind of tinkering around the edges a little bit, and it just doesn't seem good enough. Thank you. I had to vent that off, Mr. Chairman, because I agree with you. You and I have had these discussions. People around this building got to start to come to grips with how big these problems are.
Gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, members, just as a bit of a transition to looking at some of these performance measures, since at least 1993, we've had language in Minnesota statutes that's directed executive branch agencies to generate performance measures. And those performance measures can be found in various places, in the budget books, in agency profiles, in program overviews, in the change requests that agencies make. There's a website now that Minnesota Results that is executive branch maintains and updates that has agency performance information as well as goal mission and goals on it. And some agencies, in at least one case, the Department of Corrections, there's separate law or there's a law requiring that agency to do its own performance report and bring it to the legislature. The mission statements, the goals, and performance measures can give an indication as to how agencies believe that they should implement laws and spend appropriations, and it also can show how agencies think they can measure their performance and effectiveness. One section in law requires agencies to provide information so that the legislature can determine to which extent those programs are being successful. And that you've got those sections of statute in your packet. It's in Minnesota Statute 16A.10. So,
Mr. Chair, members, just to kind of complete the transition, what we then did as fiscal staff in preparation for this meeting was to take a look at just pulling together, given that the performance measures for different agencies or different programs tend to be in different places in terms of the accessibility, they tend to be different types in terms of outcomes versus output measures and different things, is to pull together some summaries in a couple of areas as examples for you in terms of, you know, thinking about what the legislature could be doing now to look at performance measures in relation to the budget and what's the value and role of those performance measures relative to the budgeting process for the upcoming session. And so you have in your packet a number of summaries that look roughly like this for various agencies or programs. And
I think it's stapled to something said Minnesota State Government Performance Measures. There's a little packet there.
Right. And, Mr. Chairman, the one-pager that you referred to is just a cheat sheet, if you will, of questions and ways that you could consider thinking about evaluating, talking about as you move forward, and as committees might move forward, looking at performance measures, what the role and value of them are in a given budget area. So, you know, as the agencies have mission and goals, obviously, are those mission and goals what you want them to be? Where is that determined? And then as you move to the key performance measures that the agencies have identified or work with, are those, do meeting those goals mean that there will be a reasonable or good chance of success of the mission in the goals? If those performance measures are doing well, what does that mean for the mission and goals? What is the relationship of the mission and goals to the budget? And also the questions you can think about in terms of setting expectations within the budgeting process, potentially in terms of targets for performance.
Then you're now going to talk about, for example, Department of Transportation and tell us in staff judgment how whatever we have fits kind of that.
Yep. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what we'll do. I'll just turn it over to the let staff introduce themselves and walk through a couple of examples.
And this is just illustrative, members. It's not meant to be definitive. It's kind of try to give us a little sense of how close we are to being able to do this. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Corinne Zewers with House Fiscal staff. And we would like to direct your attention to the Summary of Performance Measure sheet for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And what we did is in the mission and summary section is we summarized the vision and mission and core functions of the agency. And we specifically focused the measures on the state roads area, specifically the infrastructure investment and planning services activity within the state roads program. And that activity focuses on the short and long-term planning for state roads, as well as the state road construction program and the trunk highway bonds and the debt service for those bonds. And there are three main areas for performance measures within the budget books. The first is related to pavement conditions and the ride quality index. That's related to the smoothness of the roads and the quality of the ride on the roads. The second is related to the structural condition of bridges, and they have three different measures for that in the budget books. And the last is regarding the construction project schedule.
Walk through an example real quick.
Well, one example, and I'll use the construction project schedule as the example. They look at the percent of construction projects put out for bid in the year as planned. And one thing that I want to note...
That's the bottom one on the first page there.
Yes. And one thing that I'd like to note is that it's classified, or we classified it as an outcome measure, but it could very easily be classified as an output measure or an efficiency measure. It just depends on how the department uses that measure. As an example, as an output measure, they could look at it just as a specific level of activity, just as the number of projects planned. As an efficiency, they could look at it in terms of how effective was the agency in terms of their planning process. As an outcome measure, they could look at it in terms of how all of the policies work together in terms of right-of-way acquisition, environmental review, and such.
Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg.
This is, I think, an example of where I was coming from earlier. So the department has determined that construction project as a percentage of what they've planned is an important tool to measure. One thing I can do is not very plan very many projects and have a high percentage of them completed, and I'm really performing good. That may not be what the legislature policy would be. We may indeed want to have, less congestion or safer roads, or I like the first one, the pavement conditions. I mean, I can drive down and I, you know, I go back to what my wife said when the road was so rough that it knocked her cruise control off.
Warren, where's the pavement condition?
Well, on page one or two, it's up higher on that. It's the pavement condition is one, and structural condition of bridges. I mean, those are important measurements.
All right, I see it.
But construction project schedule, I as an administrator, I can just not plan very many and get them all done, and good be good. So my question is again, how do we get our what we think is important for the bureaucracy? Now, I think if we said, you know, this is a long term goal, and probably we're doing more construction, we're improving the bid performance of the construction projects. That's the type of thing I would like to see.
Representative Silver, it seems like what we could accomplish, I hope, do we have, has the staff gone far enough that in each of the division areas we have a document like this now, or are we not that far yet? Okay. Seems to me one of the things we could set in motion, if we chose, and if the finance committees were open to it, would be to have staff get to work to get a document like this and pull together what we think we have right now. And then if the division chairs would put that in front of their committees, then they could have that discussion of, is that what we want or not? Well, that would certainly help me when divisions come to ask, how much money are we going to get? And I don't know how it would go in each division. I mean, each division would probably, there's probably a lot of stuff there they all agree with. Maybe they just need to figure out what they all agree with or don't agree with and kind of hone it down a little so we all just had a better sense. It's not as if they don't think about those things. They maybe just don't do it in an organized way right now.
And Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, this may be a good goal to have. I just don't understand the goal.
Well, and we're not going to understand it, but that division might understand whether it's a good goal or not.
But Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, I think it gets exactly to the point. We are agencies by nature of what they do are measuring what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of measuring a goal that is driving a policy or a desired or visible outcome to the public, they are going around measuring what they do. And I'm not blaming them for that. I think that's quite natural.
That might be a good thing internally for them.
Internally, it might be a very important management piece. But as a legislative body, that is one of the charges is both to set and, I believe, measure outcomes on behalf of citizens. I think that a lot of these things don't really, you know, mean a lot to us and probably means even less to the public. I mean, pavement condition is probably a good example of something that actually might mean something to the public. The case of health, if you set goals around reducing the types of diseases, and I know Senator Berglund has been very instrumental in getting us to move in this direction, the types of big diseases that cause other problems down the healthcare stream, if we set measurable goals on these things, the money will follow to drive it. Renewable energy, the renewable energy standard, a great example of setting a policy that did not cost the state a dime to begin with, may cost us something in the long run in terms of putting some dollars in, but it's measurable. It drives dollars towards it in terms of outcomes, and you can go back and evaluate how are we doing. I think the point is a lot of these things are things that are important to the management of an organization, but not necessarily going to be as important as other things are to the lives of the people that we serve. And I think that's what I heard Mr. Armajani say. They're often measuring what they do. We need them to measure what we want them to do.
And I think what the two staff people in front of us have done is, and others, is they have some comments on the back of here that kind of summarize their sense of where we're at on these objectives and goals vis-a-vis the department. And that I've just reading that, that's very helpful since that's not my area. I've never been on that committee.
looks like some work that could be done in the committee to kind of hone this down and get an agreement with the executive agencies where we were headed, why we're headed there. It looks doable. It seems like a lot of information that's already kind of in play. Is that?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Krista Boyd with Senate Fiscal Staff. And we also had a list of additional performance measures that is just a sampling. And I want to show you just for this area that we focused on, infrastructure investment planning, which encompasses the state road construction piece. This is a document that's provided to the committee. It's just a snapshot of some of the performance measures. So this is just a small sampling of them, along with the target, where they are in meeting the target currently when the snapshot is provided. So this is a document that the committee does discuss in budget years, or at least they have in the one budget year that I've been a part of, that it was gone over in detail. And this information, I just want to take a step back and say that this information comes directly from the department's statewide transportation plan. That was the last one was done in 2003, and that's a long-range plan. And just to give you an idea of how these measures are derived, that the department does have 10 overarching policy statements of things they'd like to achieve, and that leads into desired policy outcomes, which sets up where the performance measures come from. This is all laid out in their transportation plan document. This is something that, although I wasn't here in 2003, I know that the legislature does have input on, and that the update is going on right now for the next update of this plan. So that's a conversation the legislature can have with the agency as well.
So how, if all of that was there, could we have gotten in a situation where there was a policy disagreement of whether we needed revenue to accomplish those objectives? Because there obviously was for quite a few years there. But it sounds like they've got this big policy plan and stuff. And is there a disagreement over the policy plan? You may not have the answer. I'm just trying to figure out how to think through this. Was there a disagreement over the policy objectives? Was there just people kind of said, yeah, that's the plan, but I mean, what's going on?
Mr. Chair,
or is there no review, or what?
Yeah, I don't know that I can answer that specifically. I can tell you that in the statewide transportation plan, it was specifically said that these targets are not fully achievable with current levels of funding, and that was in 2003.
Okay, so that was there.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is a proper handoff then to the legislature and the governor. We've told you what we can't get this done without X. Okay, so it sounds like it was in place. Okay. Should we try another area real quick here? Senator Bergen, you want to do something in human services? Or? Thank you very much. Good work.
Michelle.
Some of us are now going to find out what you people do down there. We know you work hard. We're just not quite sure what you do.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is John Walls. I'm with the House Fiscal Staff, and with me is...
Mr. Chair, I'm David Godfrey, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Mr. Chair, you should have in your packet a second one of these.
Yep.
And our apologies, it's good.
Minnesota Care Grants, it starts?
Yes. It's a good thing we're not being measured today, because we should have put Health and Human Services where name of agency is, so we apologize for that today. Mr. Chair, I know I'll be reiterating what some people had said previously, but we understand that these agencies need to set goals, and in order to achieve those goals, they need to constantly measure their progress and find out when adjustment is needed. But we also felt that adjustment can be done either at an administrative level internally or at a legislative level externally to reflect legislative priorities. We also understand that performance measures can be difficult to reach, and if performance measures are set only internally, there's a temptation to measure goals that are easy to reach or to set the bar low. And I'm not making a criticism of the Department of Human Services, just speaking in general terms. So we chose to look at Minnesota Care Grants because it had been an important area to the committee. And Minnesota Care is a health care program for low-income Minnesotans who do not have access to affordable health insurance. And their key program goals from the budget book are that Minnesotans will be healthy and that use of state's participation in the healthcare market be used to improve healthcare quality, access, outcomes, and affordability for all Minnesotans. And to meet those key program goals, they had listed a couple of performance measures. The first is to contain cost increases in Minnesota healthcare programs and DHS spoke that they would take steps to improve integrity and efficiency. And while we understood that these were things that could be done to lower health care costs, that there are two sides to that coin. And perhaps another area, which Dave will speak about later, would be to lower the actual cost of health care by improving the health care quality of, say, people with chronic diseases and other things that we're focused on in the health care reform legislation. So we thought this was a good measure, that they measure themselves on that function, but there were other performance measures that could be used that would reflect legislative priorities and keep them on pace to meet that goal. A second goal that they listed was the percentage of children enrolled in Minnesota health care programs who receive the expected number of well child visits. And these were visits to the home within the first 15 months of a birth to make sure that those children were healthy and parents were doing proper management of young children so that their health were maintained, and that this is something that would achieve improve health care quality and things of that nature. But these were the two primary things that we saw that were listed in the budget book, and there were some other legislative priorities which could be used as performance measures, and Mr. Godfrey will talk about those now.
In the next box, it's listed additional performance measures. We just have specifically one measure that the legislature has specified that the agency meet, but then also a couple of other examples of potential measures out there. The first is the number of new enrollees as a result of outreach efforts that were passed in 2007 and 2008. In this case, really the source for this would be the fiscal note, which specified the number of expected new enrollees that would come into the program as a result of spending we were doing on an outreach effort. And it would be helpful to know, and hopefully we'll get this information from the department at some point leading up to the session, is how many new enrollees have we actually seen in the program as a result of this outreach effort. The next additional performance measure would be the legislative performance incentive that the legislature passed in 2007, which set aside $272,000 of the department's base budget in the management area and basically withheld that for the first year and then directed the agency to meet two specific goals that the legislature wanted achieved. And the one that pertains to MinnesotaCare is to decrease the average application processing time to 30 days or less. There's also another one that had to do with state-operated services and the sex offender program, but this one is specifically MinnesotaCare-related. And the idea was that the Department of Finance would determine whether or not the agency had met these goals, and then if it had, would release that money to the agency at the end of the fiscal year. And then finally, there's also some statutory language out there regarding improving the long-term health outcomes for people with chronic condition as a result to the medical home reform that was passed in last year's healthcare reform effort. And this is really kind of an stated outcome or goal that's in that legislation. And then on the back page of this document we have...
Wait, if I could just ask a question. Do the examples of additional performance measures, do they result from, and I guess I'm asking Senator Berglund or staff, do they result from, are they there to explain why more money was spent, or are they to try to put some flesh for the committee on what's going on in the agency objectives, or is there no relation sometimes? Senator Berglund?
Well, Mr. Chairman, in regard to the processing time of applications for MinnesotaCare, we were all getting a lot of complaints from constituents. And this was at a time when we required re-enrollment every 6 months. And it was taking some people as long to get enrolled, and then they'd have to start all over again.
Okay, larger context, then that was a frustration that...
It was a response.
It was a response to it. Right. It wasn't trying to drive...
And the state law actually said that they were to process the applications within 30 days. So we said, we're going to hold you accountable to that. And I'll just tell you that they took these couple of little things that we did where we withheld increases, a small part of the increase in management pay in regard to these things. They took these things much more seriously than a lot of the other things that they claim they were trying to do.
Whereas the new enrollee one seems like that was a way to get a big measure of, are we covering more people?
We had put money in the budget to give out to organizations on a per new enrollee basis. And we wanted to measure whether we were getting what they said we would get for it.
Representative Hills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that the way Senator Berglund's wording of this goal is very good, because she wants to know specifically as the results of their outreach. If you just would have measured the new numbers of enrollee, I mean, the economy has changed.
I see, yes.
People are
I see,
at work.
See,
and so yeah. It's very important when you word these goals to make certain that you're measuring what right. you're attempting to measure.
Mr. Chair, these three performance measures that were included by the legislature also, it isn't just a response to constituents. They also speak to the key program goals. Take, for example, the application processing time. The agency had data that this was a barrier to people getting re-enrolled, as well as the length of the form. And if one of the program goals is to improve access or to improve health by having people have health insurance, you should measure if there's a barrier that keeps people from getting that service and reaching those goals.
Okay. And you don't have to read through. This is very... Mm-hmm. I mean, these comments that staff have done on the back of these are really, that's good stuff. It really helps me quickly understand where we're at in terms of potential. Okay. We may not have time, education people, sorry, we may not have time to go through those right now. Senator Berglund?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just have a question, and nobody needs to answer the question right now.
Okay.
But you will remember in the biennium before last, we gave some one-time money to the Veterans Homes Board, and part of that money was supposed to be used for mock surveys. And we added a rider that said that at least two surveys that year would be done at the Minneapolis home. Well, there was only one mock survey done at the home that year, and I've just discovered this. And so, you know, I mean, that was like pretty specific reason they were asking for the money, and it was a pretty specific request that they at least do two in the home that they were having the most trouble with, and they didn't do it, and yet they got the money. And you know, so I don't know what can be done if people aren't using the money the way we appropriated. I don't know myself that there's any recourse for it. So I'm wondering, as these discussions progress, if we could look at that a little bit.
Madam Speaker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, it strikes me that that's part of the, and I think we all heard this, that part of the point is the monthly review of said goals or outcomes. And, you know, obviously we'd have to sort of have a discussion about if someone isn't or doesn't spend the money the way they say they're going to or fully meet it. But I guess the way to catch that earlier and prevent that from happening in the future is some sort of reporting system where if the problem, you know, who knows what the problem is, right? We could speculate. More expensive than they thought, some sort of issue they might have, but it might have been able to be caught along the way and some sort of intervention happened. Now you've learned this, I mean, this is years later from...
Right, and in the meantime, you know, for the last 5 years, we have had the Veterans Homes yes. Board or whoever it was that lately got the responsibility of managing that in front of my committee at least four times a year. And yet, you know, we can't, I mean, nobody's going to volunteer that they didn't do something they were supposed to do.
Right.
You know, you have to keep probing and probing and probing and probing.
Well,
and perhaps if they would have had the mock survey done, maybe they wouldn't have had the fines that were issued to them. Who knows? I mean, you know, anyway, I just use that as an example of if people aren't using the money that we give them for what we tell them to use it for, after the fact, when we find out they didn't do it, we don't have a lot of to say about that.
Right. Mr. Chair and Senator Brigola, it makes me think, I mean, it is incumbent on us to make a better system here in terms of being able to review specific goals. And I think beginning somewhere is important. And it's really, Representative Carlson reminded me of our experience after the 35W bridge collapse. And I know that MnDOT did not enjoy the experience at all. But we brought them in every 30 days in front of our committee that we had set up, House and Senate, and really drilled down on what was happening in that budget because they needed something from us, right? They needed that authority to spend that federal money. And it was uncomfortable as all get out.
Found out there was a cash flow problem.
But we found out an awful lot that I am most certain we could not have found out any other way than having public meetings and having the bright light of sunshine on it. And so I think that we are going to continue our work in the House, and hopefully we can do this in conjunction with the Senate. We are very interested right now in not just focusing, and we absolutely will balance the budget. We all know we will. We must by the state constitution. But if it just becomes a math problem and we don't take the opportunity here to really do some things differently and do better oversight and better outcomes-based budgeting, we are going to just continue to cycle through these roller coasters. And I think that, you know, it's not about more government or less government. It's about better government and better delivery of this. And I think you highlight a great example of something that maybe could have been, you know, figured out earlier, right? That there was a huge, you know, at least a big problem in your book in terms of, and now it's damaged the trust between you and the department.
I mean, we've had people die since then in that nursing home. So, you know, it isn't like this wasn't a serious thing. It was a serious thing. But, you know, nobody believes that we will not fund the Minnesota Veterans Homes.
Right.
So, oh, well, what else? Life goes on and more people are provided pretty poor care, I guess.
Yeah. Members, we've kind of run out of time. My apology to Mr. Showalter. I don't... Is he here? I apologize if he is. I'm sorry. He was going to present, and I think there was a group. And let me just ask members. I attended a meeting where they described the budgeting updates and stuff that they're doing. Is that something like tax committee doesn't know what's going on there? You don't know. So, all right, we'll probably have them on the agenda next time that just gives a quick update. There's some long-term implications to what they're doing that I think we want legislative input on. As to, and they want it. They would like to know what legislators think they need in their budget documents. In your packet is a note from Marcy Jeffries about the Subcommittee on Accountability, which I actually didn't know was created until after the session. So it's not my thing, but I think it's a good idea. And it just reviews what that group is going to do, and I think the speaker is in the process of appointing that, and they'll get to work, and then you know about it, right?
We're going to talk about it. Yeah. We're going to talk about
it. Yeah, so I just want to give a heads up that there will be a subcommittee center box on that on our side. We put our top committee chairs on that. And then finally, Madam Speaker, just for your purpose, and I might as well just hand it out, I used some of this in the comments I had last night in the speech. And I thought I would just pass it out. It's got a big draft on it. It absolutely is not something that's been vetted very well. But we need everybody's thoughts about what potential budget guidelines we might use this session. It'd be nice if, as a group, we could all come to some. My intent in the Senate is to have a set of budget guidelines, whether the finance chairs or the tax chair or the House want to do it. I'm going to personally have a set of guidelines. And this is just an original cut. I've not vetted it very much. So if anybody else is interested in having guidelines, I'd love to work with you. If we could, the broader the group that agrees to the guidelines probably would help. If we get the governor to agree to a set of guidelines, that'd be good too. But I just, so I don't mean this, I'm going to do it personally and encourage my members to go along with that. But
Mr.
if they
Chair,
don't, I'm going to do
comment
it anyway.
On my comments? I mean, is that?
No, okay. No. I just look for an area where we could all bring a little rigor to what we're trying to do this year. That's
Mr. Chair, I think it was interesting last night. We were at, we should tell them where we were at. We were at a Metro Cities meeting, and Mr. Hansen was there as well. And the interesting part of it, I think, was that there were a lot of themes that were similar between what you and yes. I were talking about. You know, I think that this is a lot of things on a piece of paper in terms of guidelines.
Probably
know.
Too many.
Yeah. I mean, you probably. But
we put a laundry list down.
I think it's interesting. And I think that we're definitely going to have to try something different here.
I may agree. Good. And put that big word draft on there. It can either become something or not, but again, I'm just for everybody's. I'm going to have one. If anybody knows how I ran my own personal committees when I had taxes, I'm going to have a goals and objectives, and it's going to affect whatever decisions I'm in a position to make around here. I'm basically opening it up to people to have input on that if they choose, and I would love to do it with the House if we could, and even in the executive branch if we could. Anything else? We'll probably meet the Monday or Tuesday. We'll get in touch to see what's convenient right after the forecast so we kind of know where we're really at. And then we'll kind of continue this discussion and open to suggestions from members, what they think would be helpful in addition to what we've done so far. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, staff. Good job on those.